Unitarian Universalist Society this morning, the first day of spring. The day after the courtesy of a thank you group who met here last night in celebration of spring and left us in the afternoon. I saw in the newsletter that they announced the final service in a series on racial justice, and I want to point out that it's not final. It's the last one in this particular series. But this is an issue that we are not going to let go of. The General Assembly this year is devoting another large period of time to this issue, and I think it's going to be a lot of major thrust within the Unitarian Universalist movement throughout the coming years. So I'm sure that we will keep visiting this issue, because I know we will not reach any kind of resolution this quickly. But I'm really looking forward to Pat Watkins, who's an outstanding member of our community, who's been a lay minister and served in several capacities, and always has outstanding services. Of course, we're going to sing Kumbaya in the Prayer Song 52. Happy stories, but I think this song
probably a little sad. So if you give me 3 minutes of your time, you listen to the words very carefully, and then I'm going to ask you what you think the meaning of the song is that is. Want to do that? Okay. All I have to do is find the start button.
Not as good as the story, but
Let's, the children want to go down here now. Somebody asked me that yesterday, and I no longer have the letter exercise I had. And I feel like I can no longer remember the name of the It's really old, it must be 25 or 30 years old.
I had trouble with the first line of the chorus. I got roll up your sleeves, but the first line I couldn't tell if it was.
Give me your old clothes and brush your old shoes. Okay, today we're going to be talking about privilege, and this is the continuation of a program that Nancy Graham had started to do or had done the beginning of for the first service that we had on multiculturalism. And so it's sort of interesting that this is the last service in this series, and that we are then going back to the same topic. And the material that we are going to be using comes from the General Assembly Handbook on Racial Justice. And the article that I've taken this from is from an article by Peggy McIntosh from Wellesley College entitled White Privilege. So we're going to break up into small groups, and I'm going to be giving you a set of items here. And I had trouble when I was writing these out yesterday. I was getting sidetracked a little because some of the things that delineate the white privilege in here are also things that can be used for other kind of privilege. Sexual privilege or privilege of sexual orientation or religious privilege, etc. So be careful that this program has to do with white privilege and don't get sidetracked like I almost did. What I'd like to do is have these first two rows, if the first row would turn your seats around so you face in the second row in each. And then,
that was a great recording. You got all the buzz that's in the room.
No, I turned it off.
Oh, good.
He wants to turn it off.
Yeah, well, I'd stay in the circles if I were just bend your necks this way. Let me say a couple of words before we go on and find out what your decisions were on these. Number one, the woman who wrote this originally, this began as a study of male privilege, and then she decided that there were other ways that you could deal with privilege. Her philosophy I didn't completely agree with the article because I think there was a lot of guilt involved in it, and there was a lot of a sense of mea culpa, and there was the implication that one should do away with these privileges that people have. I think the only thing in doing away with the privilege is to see that other people who don't have those privileges then are enabled to enjoy them. But I don't think that does away with privilege. All that does is changes it from, say, a white privilege into a class privilege or a national privilege or some other kind of privilege. But one thing that I think was important was that many of these things that she listed are things that most of us never stop to think of as being privileges that we enjoy. And I think it's important that we look at it that way and realize that a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do the things that some of us do have the opportunity to do. So with that, let's see what you came up with. Did any of you find that there was something on your list that you felt was not a privilege enjoyed by white people, and that it was something that everyone had the privilege of enjoying? Certainly, there are a couple of things on here that might have led to that kind of discussion. Well, I heard at one of the groups, I think, Rosemary, where you were talking about posters and cards and so forth.
Well, we talked about that and we stated that there is improvement because you do now see cards, greeting cards for Hispanics, for African-Americans.
Read that particular item.
Okay, one of the...
In Madison.
Yeah, no, not only in that, but in city.
Share it with us, Rosemarie, so the rest of us know what you're talking about.
Okay, number two here is I can easily buy posters, postcards, greeting cards, dolls, and children's magazines and books featuring people of my race. We said that there has been improvement, but the easily is still a great question mark.
I did hear Barbara say not in South Dakota.
And I would say probably in big cities much more easily than in the countryside, even more than in big cities in South Dakota. Let's not put that state down.
Okay, so your group did feel that was a privilege.
Anybody make comments on that from other people? You heard what the island is.
You always make a comment because I have that effort in my family. You can find items like that, but I can assure you they are for the privilege because cultural dolls or cultural anything is exceedingly expensive. It's going to be $150, $200 for a baby doll that you can find that are correct. But their stuff is out there, but it's definitely not available to the average person.
Rick, did you have...
I'm just wondering about the reasonableness of asking a shopkeeper in North Dakota to keep a wide range of culturally specific and diverse items.
American things have got to be.
What's that?
Native American.
Well, that should be there.
Well, and that's what we said. It's not just African American. Other minorities.
Absolutely.
And in South Dakota, it would be the Native Americans.
Why would not Native American dolls or black dolls have to be limited to Native American populations or black populations or Asian populations? Anybody want to?
I just want to mention that's been one of the breakthroughs with the Abby doll that Pleasant Company has done. It was the first major black doll that white girls wanted. And you will see, and I've never seen this before, you will see white girls carrying a black doll with great pride, and that has basically never been true before. The black dolls and the Asian dolls have always been minority targeted. I had a black baby doll when I was a child along with other dolls, but the one that I would take out with me, in a baby carriage or something, would probably tend to have been a white doll, and there were very few made because it was a smaller market. But the number that they have sold with the Addie doll has actually been phenomenally large.
Karen,
just about to say that's simply because they're able to advertise and market much more extensively. There are a number of companies that manufacture black dolls, and they're listed in Emerge, they're listed in Essence, they're listed in magazines like that. But they may not meet a wider public as an Addie doll is, because they make all kinds of dolls, not only the Addie doll, but all these other dolls, and within their whole series of advertising their dolls, they advertise this one too. Yeah. So I don't think just because it's the Addie doll at this Pleasant Company, but because of the marketing that they
in a way, it does have something to do with it, because that whole line of dolls is sort of a...
It's
the kind of thing that once you get one doll in the series, you're sort of invested in the company in a way, and so the tendency, the reputation of the company is
such that one of the sales that you had to pay $50 for this doll. I would never pay $50 for a doll for my own kids. I wouldn't pay more than $20.
Okay. No, but there are lots of people who pay $300 or $400.
You can find little leg dolls in a dime store.
Well, my own experience, and then I'm going to cut this with that, is that in the past, it seems to me that a lot of the black dolls, I don't know about Native Americans, or I don't know that I've ever seen Native American dolls other than the kind that you would see at the tourist kind. But a lot of them were of stereotypical black children, and
And you did see my children carrying them.
There's a collection called the Something Mint, and they have plates and pictures on. They also have dolls to collect.
Let's talk for a second about postcards and pictures.
They look like the little Indian mini-hahas from long ago. They look like
how about the postcards and pictures or posters?
Nowadays, I think it's Hallmark has computerized cards and you can program your card to be anything you want. But unfortunately, it's not to accommodate need, it's to sell more stuff.
And on this subject, I was in Kohl's at Sherman Plaza, which is on the northeast side of town yesterday, and they were selling these fairly cheap prints, like $3 at some, and one of them was Jesus on the cross, and Jesus was black, which was sort of what I thought was an interesting attempt to try to relate to the neighborhood.
Last Saturday, I went to Milwaukee to see the Jacob Lawrence exhibit at the Milwaukee Art Institute. And this is a well-known black artist. And one of the things that struck me after I saw that exhibit, I went to the rest of the museum because I had never been there before. And it really hit me that they had this wonderful exhibit in one space, but there was not a single other art object or picture in the museum by a black artist or by any other minority. Well, there was some Asian, but Chinese from China, but no American, Asian American or Native American art. And I thought that was sort of interesting.
Diego Rivera is revered.
I don't think they had him. Well, he's not an American. He was Mexican. Okay. Let's, no one else found anything else that they had a question about not being a special privilege? Let's look at who had number two. Which group had number two?
We did.
Would you like to tell us what,
okay, the question,
read your
the question is different, right?
Read your three items and then let us know what you chose as the what you thought was the most painful.
Okay. The three items were, number one, I can swear or dress sloppily, arrive late, or be unable to answer someone's question without having people attribute my actions to the bad morals, poverty, or ignorance of my race. Number two was I can easily buy posters. Actually,
yeah, we did that.
Number three was if I want to move, I can be pretty sure of renting or buying housing which I can afford in an area in which I want to live. And I think we all agreed that the most painful, most damaging thing was number one. I can not do anything that looks negative and so forth without having people attribute my actions to the bad morals, poverty, or ignorance of my race. And as Lita was pointing out, if this kind of mindset that is laid upon the people is internalized, a young person growing up will carry that around for the rest of his or her life.
One thing that you might notice, and Carolyn, you might want to speak to this, if you go out to a function, or if you happen to be, sometimes on the campus, for instance, or you go to to the theater, if you notice black people who are there, generally tend to be very dressed up, mm-hmm. and they don't come in torn jeans and et cetera, et cetera. And the reason for that is because of what this item says, mm-hmm. that people do judge them on the basis of how they look, and sometimes it doesn't help. But
yeah, that may be one of the reasons. I think we have been taught that we are Sunday clothes to come mm-hmm. to punk.
Yeah.
We have always had Sunday clothes.
That's true.
Or Easter clothes. Mm-hmm. My mom used to buy the little round Peter Pan hats with the long streamers for Easter. And we'd be in the Easter parade and Christmas. So I think we've learned.
That's a cultural kind of thing.
My experience in going to the Civic when we first opened it, I knew how to put on my clothes and wear my mixed stole. And when I got down there, I found flannel shirts.
Let's, how about number three?
Excuse me, may I ask just one question? Is there any things in, 1, 2, 3, or whatever, that you feel everyone has regardless of race? I haven't been able to find that.
We do. Yes. All the entire group does not. Well, I thought the poster. I thought the poster card one was, but
no,
this
you
group.
Have to this group. Why don't you find whatever they need in the stores?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was thinking that that was one that was not specifically a white privilege, because I think in today's day and age, but I'm being provincial about it because I'm thinking of Madison. I mean, I really have gotten to the point where I can go down to the university bookstore and find those things. But they're right that that's not the case.
That, is there anything on any of these pages that says everybody, you feel everyone has this thing?
There were only one or two items that anybody, I think, could even think was something that was not a privilege, or that was not a white privilege. And she's already thrown one of those out. So.
Well, I don't think I've thrown it out, but
we only have like 10 minutes, and I'd like to get around to some of the
Well, ours was, number one was, if I move to a new neighborhood house or apartment, I can feel pretty comfortable about the attitudes with which my new neighbors will receive me. And the second one was, I can go home for most meetings of groups I belong to and feel tied in rather than isolated, out of place, unheard, held at a distance, or feared. And the last one was, I can criticize our government and talk about how much I fear its policies and behavior without being seen as a cultural outsider or paranoid. And I think on the first two, the one about the new neighborhood and going to meetings, well, we put B and C actually for all three of them. We didn't rank them.
So
but we did have a discussion about whether, moving to a new neighborhood, whether if you were, say, a black person and were wealthy and moved to a white neighborhood, whether you would be less uncomfortable or comfortable about attitudes than if you were poorer and moved into a richer neighborhood than you were. And then on the second one about meetings of groups, we did talk a little bit about how when you express your attitudes in your own group, then that you're not considered paranoid when you're expressing them publicly, that's a real problem.
Mary, let me ask you a question. When you say about being poor or being wealthy, are you speaking of a poor minority person moving into a mixed neighborhood as opposed to a wealthy minority person moving into a mixed neighborhood? Is that what you mean?
I just read the answer. I like the classes factor.
Okay.
It's really hard to separate.
Yeah, okay.
Class.
And we agreed on that too. I mean, class, it always it does enter.
But we talk to see yes, but that's what we want to leave that out of here and deal just with the question of the color and ethnic.
How about the folks back here? Which numbers did you have?
1, 5.
What did you
we weren't exactly sure how we were supposed to be. How we were dealing with the multiple choice card or whatever. Ours were I can make a travel hotel or restaurant reservation without fear that I would be turned away or not treated well because of my ethnic background. Another one was, I can arrange to protect my children most of the time from people who might not like them or who will treat them in a disparaging way. And the third one was, I can watch television and movies or open a paper or magazine and see people of my race represented. And I think we thought that for the first one, the reservations, technically you have civil rights laws, but as Perkins showed, that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to follow them, So we didn't think that even though legally people have that in actual practice, it doesn't always work that way. So we didn't think that was a privilege everybody really has. I guess we kind of chose, I hope people think I'm just speaking, speak up. But I think we thought that that probably B was we would put the item B of a minority person would be least likely to be able to watch TV and movies and see themselves represented in TV, movies, or newspapers. They might be represented, but they'd probably be represented in a negative light rather than a positive light more often.
Is that the one you felt was most would be most painful not to have, the privilege that it would be most painful not to have? Or is that the one that you felt the minority person was least likely?
That's right. Yeah, I think we thought that was the least likely to have. We thought that it would be most painful or troublesome if they could not keep their children away from people who would treat them badly. So.
Would you like to, any comment from you, Jody, on that?
Well, I think when I think about all of these questions, the bottom line for me, I think, is what is it that creates the internalization of fear. And I agree with what you've said. I think worrying about whether or not the children will either be safe or have homeschooling or whatever. I think whatever, that's kind of been my scale on these, is having to do with internalizing the fear.
Did you ever have a problem with that?
I think that it's not only for minority people to feel that way, because I know that there are times when I am scared in my school of people of different races. When, I mean, not just, oh no, there's a black person, I'm scared now. Not like that at all, but there are times when there, I mean, just in the past few months, there have been lots of fights and people of my race getting beaten up by people, by African-American people, for really what seems to be no reason. And I think that the white people in my school are a lot more scared of black people than black people are scared of the white people. And I think there's been a big role reversal in a way that has caused that, and I don't know why it's happened, and I don't like it, and I don't want them to be scared of me, but I don't want to be scared of them either.
But I think that that's not really what we're dealing with here. I mean, it's not talking about the fear of one person for another. What we're really dealing with is whether one person is able to do something or to have something that another, or enjoy something that another person
have,
is not.
Except when children feel they cannot walk down a certain hall at
West High School, then
it is a situation where their privilege to walk down a hall has been taken away because of intimidation.
Okay.
So I think that there is, as Lily said, there's probably a reversal that's happened.
So this would, that you're then putting this in the category of something which is not a privilege any longer.
A limitation, you're saying?
That this would be.
I think a privilege is flipped. I don't think it's a privilege for any parents now to assume that their children are always safe. I don't think any parents have that privilege. Across the board, it doesn't fit, just really matter what class or anything else. Nothing, money, nothing protects you from that situation. So I think that's.
But this question is not dealing with safety. It's dealing with the fact that I can protect my children from people who may not like them or who treat them in a disparaging way. I mean, in other words, your child going to school. And having the sense, say, sitting in a classroom where no one else will speak to that child because that child is a minority child and people shy away from them. Or people who assume that your child is stupid simply because it's not a white child. I think the safety issue and fighting and that whole crime thing is a different
thing. This has never happened to me, but if I were put in a classroom where everyone else in the classroom was an African American, I would feel very, very not at ease. My parents would be very worried for me, and I would be very worried
for
me.
Well, I think that's terrible that would be the case. And I mean, I think that's a program of its own. I mean, there are reasons why you would feel this way, and I'm not going to say that there's something wrong with you for feeling this way, but this is not, I don't think this is what this line item is in this particular thing.
But I think since the roles are in a state of flux, it cannot be just eliminated. You know, this issue, it becomes an issue that becomes larger.
It's
Yeah, but we're not dealing with the larger one here, so I'm going to move on to the next thing. Because treating someone disparagingly is not the same thing as what she's talking about.
Yeah,
I'm going to move on to the next item because we've only got 5 minutes.
I'm just going to say that racism is so pervasive.
Yes.
Racism is so pervasive that we have to teach our children where everybody else might be afraid of being kidnapped or whatever else. This is another dimension of what we have to teach our children.
Yeah, that's true.
To the person in charge, I'll be meeting with a person of my own race. Number two is that I can be sure that my children will be given curriculum materials which testify to the existence of their race. Number three is that I can go home from most meetings of groups I belong to and feel tied in rather than isolated, out of place, unheard, held at a distance, or feared. That's for our response. For C, I think most of us agree that it would be the lack of which would be most painful or troublesome to a minority person would be not being able to go home from a meeting feeling accepted or listened to or heard.
Okay.
And least likely to have, number one, speak to a person in charge and have it be a person of my race.
Yeah. Would least likely to
experience that.
Least likely to
the minority it. Person would be least likely to experience that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we thought.
We're thinking of white people employed in places, black people employed in places, white places,
right? I'm sorry, but I go to very few places where the person in charge is black.
That's his point.
That's his point.
That's the whole point. Okay, I want to take just a couple of minutes. I know you all have lots to say, and you want to say lots, but we're going to run out of time to try to let you all talk. But I do want to do one other thing here, and that is, as I was working on these items, I was also thinking of things that had been left out of them, and privileges that perhaps were not on her list. And I wonder if any of you can think of anything that has not been mentioned here or that you would like to add to this group of privileges. The one that I added, the one about the museum, going to a museum and not seeing any art from your own race. Racial or ethnic group.
In many communities, not Madison, it might be more difficult to find foods that you want to eat.
Is that on someone's, that should be on,
should
is
be
that
on the
someone's
card.
List?
Is what it should be. Mm-hmm.
There was an item.
I thought that. I read it.
I didn't get all of the items that were given out because we didn't have that many groups, but thank you for that. That's one that was on the list. Bob?
Our group didn't say anything, so I'll read one that we had a concern about is using checks, credit cards, or cash, counting on my skin color not to work against the appearance of financial reliability. We thought that could be particularly troublesome because it comes up repeatedly.
To tell you the truth, I think that's one that I added to the list because it's something that happened to me. And I can tell you a specific store in Madison that will always ask me for two or three pieces of identification. I'll tell you, for one thing, I don't think you can always blame a total business for something. It's the individual, in the case of check in the check business, I think maybe you can. It may be the policy of the manager. And that's Land's End Outlet on Mineral Point Road.
If the person who's doing it represents the company, then the...
Yeah, I'm saying, in the check situation, my guess is that that's the management policy, not the individual clerk.
If one salesperson does that, if he or she represents the company, and then the company should be held liable for it.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, that's the situation.
Well,
he shouldn't
be an employer of that company.
No, he shouldn't be.
And then
the company should, I think, get rid of and take some disciplinary action. But I don't think it's necessarily the company's fault. If you hire people for a job, and you hire people, and so have I, you can't know everything about them when you hire them. So there's some good faith that goes into that hiring. And the person you hire should have the policy, but that doesn't mean that they always observe it. And so, you know, you get rid of the person who's doing wrong. I don't think you necessarily
I've been asked for three.
And I know you're not asking people for three. I did. When I first moved to Madison, I had an incident where I went to the restaurant at the Inn on the Park for dinner. And in the back of the restaurant, the two young men who were busboys, I guess they were having a conversation about the nigger who was eating there. And I heard them. I think they didn't think I overheard them. And I reported it to the manager. The manager called those kids on the carpet, and they were just young high school boys, I think. I was staying at the Lorraine Hotel at the time because I hadn't moved into my house yet. And the manager of the restaurant made those two boys come over to the Lorraine Hotel and apologize to me.
Wow.
And then he told them if he ever heard of them doing anything like that again, they were out on their ears. I think that he did what he should have done. I don't think it would have been right for me to have sued the manager of the Inn on the Park for what those two kids did.
I'm not advocating.
Okay. We're out of time. You can all continue this over the coffee.
In this group, when talking about neighborhoods and then somebody brought in class, let me refer you to a new book. It's by Ellis Cole, C-O-S-E. We talked about it. The name of it, The Rage of the Black Middle Class. And that's what he's talking about here. It doesn't make any difference whether you were lower on the economic structure or the high. You still got on this name or something like that.
Carolyn really typified that. Here's a man, a successful man in this community, who he goes to the grocery store to Aunt Washington and safety. If you want to turn around and face the front, it may be easier to pass the basket. There's our Sunday morning offering to Larry.
Well, this is a joy and a sorrow, I suppose. I guess the sorrow is that I have to have surgery, and the joy is really, really, really. And the joy is that at least I'll get rid of some, hopefully I'll get rid of pain.
We had the opportunity on Wednesday evening to go hear the festival choir sing Elizabeth Alexander's brand new commission piece. And it was just a wonderful experience. It's a wonderful piece. And we may get to have a recording of it as part of our Earth Day service, and which is a plug for the rest of you to get going on composing forms of music.
Any other joys and sorrows?
Carrie.
Keith and I have set a wedding date. That's definitely a joy. And the next occasion is probably both a joy and a sorrow. We just signed an agreement to purchase a house on West of Rizomi.
Fantastic.
I wonder why we automatically clap in joy when we hear somebody think we're going to get married.
I clap too, Jack.
Okay, we know yours is the last.
Mike Briggs said when he said, what is it, when you, before you get married, keep your eyes half open?
No.
Yeah, and then after you're married, keep your eyes half closed.
any other joys or sorrows?
Yes.
Should there be any questions? This is definitely a
joy. Well, we like weddings.
Sounds like time for another. Any more? All right.
This morning, 8:28.
Yes.
Was the equinox.
Yay! Well, I saw him here. The sun crossed the equator or something.
Right.
Like
yes.
Yes. Yes.
Excuse me. Any introduction? Introduction. Yeah, introduction. That's what it says next. Anybody want to introduce themselves? Yes, Barbara.
In our group is Doris Gaines, who's Pat Watkins' mother.
Anybody else want to introduce themselves or any guests or visitors?
Yes, I'm a visitor. My name is Phyllis Noble.
Welcome. Up the window when the service is over and have some more coffee and conversation or agitated discussion. any more announcements?
Announcements?
Are we into announcements?
We're into announcements.
I have some actual real details now on my adult study group on myths. We'll be using this book called Myths of Time and History, which I got from the Press Bookstore, and it's called Myths of Time and History, a Unitarian Universalist Theology. Well, ignore that word. But I've arranged to have a meeting house downstairs on they think you should do five classes, so I'm going to try to do that. 5 weeks starting on Wednesday, Wednesday, April 20th, and it will finish on Wednesday, May 18th. And I would like to have at least five people, otherwise it's probably not worth it to do the class. People will need to buy a book for the class, and if people tell me that they're going to come, I will arrange to buy all the books and distribute it to you. And it will be a format, and we read a chapter a week and discuss it, you know, and then there's some homework exercises.
What time?
Huh?
What time?
Probably 7:30.
You want people to sign up?
Yeah, I would like people to sign up. Let me know whether they're interested in coming. And we do it downstairs, probably in the middle school room. Everyone has all the nice chairs down there. So anyway, it starts April 20th. Please let me know as soon as possible so that I can start ordering.
Rosemary.
I have
have one short and one other announcement. As a person who has my Girl Scout cookies, please get in touch with me. I still don't have them. And secondly, I'm going to do once again a sort of an alternative tour, which I call an inside view of Berlin this fall in September. And I'm going to put some flyers in the back there. If anyone is interested, please take a flyer and get in touch with me. It would be nice to have some Unitarians along this time. There'll be another note in the Prairie Fire, too.
Karen?
Yeah, I get a lot of magazines, and I just look through them in a few minutes, but then I don't have anything more to do with it. If anybody's interested in these kinds of things, I'll just put them back there.
Thank you. Any more announcements? Pat?
There's a very interesting meeting going to take place Friday evening, April 15th, and all day Saturday the 16th, on alternatives to violence, creating our future. It's sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility and a number of other groups. There is a registration fee for Saturday, but the keynote address Friday evening, Guns and the Juvenile Courts, by James Doyle, the state attorney general, is free. It will be at the State Historical Society Auditorium. And the workshop sessions, there are three workshops, and really it's hard to decide which one would want to go to. There are about 10 for each period. I'll put it on the bulletin board.
Cindy Hawk is doing one of them.
Cindy.
Okay.
The Prairie Board is having a newcomer's dessert that will be April 8th from 7 to 8:30. And the board members are inviting newcomers, people who've been visitors to Prairie, people who are fairly new members to Prairie, chance for newcomers to meet old timers. And I can hand you a flyer. I'll be mailing flyers to some of the people who've been guests, some of the people who aren't here today. But consider this an invitation also. Please join us.
When is it?
April 8th from 7 to 8:30. And we will, the board members will be providing the service. Old timers are welcome to come to
the board. Yes. We thought it would be a way to get to meet people and introduce ourselves and away from the rush of Sunday morning. Let's see. More announcements. Barbara?
You know, a lot of people in this room make a real difference in the life around them, and Pat Watkins is one. She's a member of the League of Women Voters, and almost 2 years ago, she pushed to have jury selection in Dane County put on the roster of things that the League would discuss. And it was true last year and again this year. Doris's son, Mr. Gaines, came from New York City and was one of the speakers at the League's meeting last year. The study continues this year, and any one of you is welcome to come, men as well as women. The first Wednesday night in April, I believe it's the 6th, in one of the county courtrooms, more discussion of how juries are selected in Dane County. I can only clue you that the morning I went to observe, in a pool of 100 people in the room, one black man. Wednesday night, 7:30, in County Courtroom D, in the City County Building on Martin Luther King Boulevard, and it's all because Pat cared.
Yay, Pat.
The minute you mentioned my brother's name, he's lost it. Furthermore, it gives
the federal government a chance to have regional prisons. So everybody can send their prisoners from Dade County or wherever to a regional prison where they'll be forever lost. Nobody will ever hear from them again. Furthermore, it makes Indians subject to laws that they are not now subject to. Indians can be accused of a federal crime and shot or whatever, whereas now they can't. That's just a small number. Another thing, last night I was in the meeting with the young man who is very anxious to legalize the smoking of marijuana as a pleasure or a medical thing or whatever, and he says that anybody who gets caught using marijuana is a felon, and you get 3 felonies and you're in prison for life. So you're going to be in prison for life if you get caught smoking marijuana 3 times. These kinds of things, this bill has 1,000 amendments. It should never be voted on, ever. It should have gone to committees and have pieces and bits taken off. The other thing it does is it makes so that we can have thousands more police, but it doesn't do much for finding out why it is people are do crimes in the first place. It doesn't do anything to rehabilitate neighborhoods, establish community centers, give housing, food, and education to the underclass of people who are the ones who are committing the crimes because they're desperate. So you've got to write and call Klug and tell him not to vote for it. And I mean tomorrow. And he has an office in Madison, so you don't have to even have a long distance call.
Any more announcements? Judy?
It's about the service for next week.
Okay.
So I can go last.
All right. Jack?
One comment. It seems to me the Social Action Committee should be doing something in the nature that Betty reports on each week. Even something handed out, something on the board. Get on top of some of these things.
Talk to Mike. Talk to Mike, Jack.
Quietly. Okay.
Two things real quick. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I have a Russian pen pal who would, she's got somebody else who translates the letters for her, and he would love to correspond to someone here in the U.S. Please, somebody come and tell me you'd like to write to him. In English. In English. No, he wants to practice his English. So he will write her letters for me, and also he will write to anybody who wants to be a pen pal with him. There is a real need for people who read and write Russian also, so if you have any friends who might be interested, they get, this is through Peace Links, and they get lots of letters from people who in Russia or in the former Soviet Union who only can write in that language. The service for next week dovetails wonderfully with Pat's service for day. It's on environmental justice. It's a pulling together of most of the social change causes under one umbrella. And my understanding is that it was partly spearheaded because there are a number of minority groups who are feeling disenfranchised from the environmental movement, the population control movement. They're not represented. So we'll be discussing that.
Are you going to mention anything about the attempts to put nuclear waste deposits on reservations?
We can. I mean, that's one of the many.
I don't know if anybody's aware of that. But
yeah, that's one of the many issues. In Crandon, yeah.
Any other announcements? All right, and we're going to be singing Lift Every Voice on page 149. Now, Lita, you're going to be singing the first verse, and then the congregation will join on verses 2 and 3.
I'm going to sing it through one time, and then will you join me on the second verse?
And the third? And the third, of course.
Lift every voice and sing.
Oh,
Tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. What a devoid.